Pushkin.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank, NA member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talk Easy, a weekly podcast of long-form conversations with the people shaping our culture today. I'm Sam Fragoso. Thank you for being here. This week on the show, we have ace improver and the always funny actress, Lauren Lapkus. Now, before recording the intro to today's episode, I looked through our small but growing archive of past interviews. It's strange, but I noticed that a fair number of folks who've come on are from Chicago. I don't know if that's a regional coincidence or if we quasi-Midwesterners like to flock to each other, but the same is true for Lapkus, who was born in Evanston. Many probably recognize Lauren from her work on Orange is the New Black. On it, she played Susan Fisher, the young, sometimes lenient corrections officer who used to bag groceries. While Lauren has proven to be versatile in various universes, whether it's Jurassic World, House of Lies, or Comedy Bang Bang, Lapkus' bread and butter is improv comedy, which is something we dive into during our talk. Starting off as a UCB performer, Lapkus broke out while appearing on the Comedy Bang Bang podcast hosted by Scott Aukerman. Her characters then, and still now, are dizzyingly entertaining. They're alive and original. Eccentric by nature.
All right, ho ho. How do you like? Uh-huh. How are you voting?
I want to vote for.
Vote.
Well, I'm already immortal, and I already live on Earth. So I choose that one because I like my life.
All right. So the treehouse.
Yeah.
Do you live in a treehouse currently? No, I know you sleep on a dollar bill in the North Pole in Santa's vest. But yeah. That begs the question: does Santa live in a treehouse?
Well, I'll never tell you.
No.
Hey, shut up.
Her work impressed everyone at Earwolf so much that they even gave her own show. It's called With Special Guest Lauren Lapkus. The idea is that each week, Lauren has some comedian or someone come on the show and host her podcast. In turn, she is, as the title promises, the special guest that she makes up on the spot. An improvised character week after week. Aukerman understood early on what many folks are understanding now, and that is watching or hearing Lapkus figure out a character in the moment, as all great improvers do, is one of the great delights of modern comedy. We recorded this conversation, coincidentally, on the day her WTF episode with Marc Maron was released. For those who listened to that, I promise that what follows is a bit different. We discuss a wide variety of topics, including the wrath of online bullying, the evolution of our aspirations and how scary that can be, and why not making it on SNL may be the best thing for Lauren and her emerging career. But first, I try to figure out how someone could create such original characters out of thin air so consistently. So, finally, here is Lauren Lapkus. I was trying to think about why you have so many characters and like so many really great characters. And I have this theory, and you can say like, Sam, this is a ridiculous theory, you don't know me at all. That's fine. But are you just a particularly observant person?
Yeah, I do think I am. Okay. Yeah, I definitely...
So I'm not completely off.
No, that's a pretty good guess. I think that maybe it was better than what I would say about why I have. But I do love looking at people, and I can't help but notice little things about people, and I definitely did that all the time growing up. My mom would like have me do impressions of different people, like celebrities or people in our family, and it was like really easy for me.
What did you notice about me?
Oh God, this is like... I don't know how to answer
I wish there was a physical shot of the thing you just did. Shot to the stomach, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had to answer that question to anybody before, so I don't think I'm going to.
Okay, that's fair. that's a good answer. That's a fair answer. So you were always observant as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And your parents were like...
Yeah, it was just something like I was kind of funny and like would do those things. And I think it just became something that a skill that I had.
Is it even something you're conscious of on a day-to-day basis?
No, I only notice it like if I imitate someone and someone else is like, oh, that was just like them. And I realize like, oh, people can't do that as easily. That's like a skill that I can easily kind of do. But yeah.
Right. Why do you think you pick up on all this like nuances of people?
I just find it really fascinating. I think it's so interesting. I was just saying yesterday that I was sitting and watching people enter like a cafe, and I was thinking like, it's so crazy that human beings can look all these different ways. Like everything can be a person. Like it's just weird. And so it's fun to look at people and notice what's special about them.
You saying they look different, or like the way they act entering a cafe is like different from other people?
Just everything. Like just the way, just even just people, the way they look though, that someone can be tall or really short or like, you know, all these different things. And then that's fascinating that, you know, like that's not really that true of that many different mammals. Like, we can look so different from one to the next.
I wonder if it's not true of other mammals, or we just think we're more special.
Probably, because I was thinking like, well, cats can all look really different, but they kind of don't. They don't go that far. It's not going to be like a teeny cat and a giant cat.
Right.
I mean, you know.
But isn't it in part because they don't talk to us?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't get to know them really well.
If animals started talking to us, I feel we would be like, oh man, that's like that's a mean animal.
Yeah,
that's a nice animal. That's an asshole.
That's true.
So. Take me to Evanston. Like, what's happening in Evanston? Because I grew up in part near the Midway Airport over there on the south side, and then in the suburbs like Burr Ridge, Cook County, nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Evanston's nice.
It is nice. It's a really great
town. It's like a beautiful place.
Yeah, anytime I go home, I really realize how lucky I was to have grown up there. It's so special.
Do you feel like you could live there?
I wish that I could. I wish that I could have a family there. I think it would be so nice, but I don't think it's for me at this point because it's just impossible to do work.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I always think I'll be 50 and then happy enough with my life that I can go back and live there forever.
You probably won't be.
I won't be happy enough?
I mean, like, you'll probably still want to keep working and stuff. Don't you think? Like, I feel like creative people you can't just, like, turn off your desire to like keep working.
No, I like the idea that you've met me for 4 minutes and that you're like, you know what? I don't think you're gonna be
50 is just not that old. I guess maybe how old are you?
Do you want to guess?
Yeah, I'm gonna guess you're 26.
21.
Oh, okay. So you're really young.
Yeah.
So
and
when
you're 30.
Yeah. So actually I know I don't think 21 and 30 are that different, but 30 is older, and I would like when I think of 50, I'm like, that's not that far. Like to 20, I would say like when I was 20 or like 19, I'd be like, that person's like 30, and I'd be like, they're like old. Like you just kind of like write it off. So 50 sounds like way old. You're not gonna be done at 50.
Okay, I hope you know that I don't think you're old.
Well, I don't really care either way. I'm not like someone who's really concerned with that. But like, I still think like 50 sounded way old when I was 20, and like it's not gonna feel that old to you.
I think that in terms of ages, it seems. like 19 is way different than 20.
Yeah.
And 20 feels different than 21. So I don't know. Like, when does that stop? I'm like asking you for advice here.
I don't know. I feel like it doesn't really stop.
Does 28 feel way different than 29?
28 and 29, no. I think, yeah, I guess at that point it's a little different. But then once you're in your 30s, there's like a whole new level of like.
What's that like?
Yeah, that's a little weird because I'm just 30 now. So like, I'm just starting to understand that a little more. But I have friends who are like 35 and they're like, I'm 40. Like, it just, you kind of just start rounding up. So I don't know. I hope that I don't do that because I don't really think of age that way. But
how do you think of age?
I'm not too concerned with getting old or like feeling like I'm done or something. Like I don't want to jump to the next round off number. You know what I mean? Like I just want to just be what I am and enjoy it.
So as a kid, were you that way? Like you enjoyed being a kid and you were?
No, I wasn't. Actually, that's kind of interesting because I was really obsessed with growing up. I really wanted to be an adult.
Oh, yeah. Like, I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were 7 and like, God, I just want to be a teenager.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be like.
You were a teenager. Like, can I just be an adult?
Yes. Heck. Always. Did you feel that way at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like around 14, I was like, I can be 21 now.
Yeah. Now I'm like, can I just go live in New York or do whatever I want?
I wasn't mature enough, though. Just in my head.
No. Oh,
it's
no, me neither.
Of grandeur, though. Like, you just think, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You feel like sick of your surroundings. Like, I got really sick of high school by the end. I was like, I just want to go to college and just be done. So it's hard. I think that's a hard part of growing up, though, because you also aren't in control of most of your life. So once you are, you don't want to speed it up.
Right.
Yeah.
What was high school? Good? Bad?
I liked high school. I didn't really have like a bad experience. I was like into theater and would do sketch, like the sketch show at UCB, at my high school, not UCB. But
UCB in Evanston.
Yeah, no. But yeah, I did like, you know, comedy shows and stuff. And I was on an improv team and I started doing improv when I was a senior in high school, like at IO and stuff in Chicago. So that's when I kind of got into what I'm doing now.
So high school is not terrible.
No, I didn't mind it. But by the end, I just was like desperate to.
Ready to leave.
Yeah.
Were your parents ready for you to go?
Not necessarily. But I didn't go far. I just went to DePaul in Chicago. So
right,
they could still stalk me.
It's like a 20-minute drive.
Yeah, it's
right?
Very close. But it felt very different because I was in the city and like that experience made me feel like I was far away.
Were you living on campus?
My freshman year, I lived on campus.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's a good deal.
Yeah. I mean, I hated that because I had to share a room with a stranger and then, you know,
what is up with it? You just don't like people here.
I don't like that kind of thing where you're forced to like be around someone for a long time. Like we just had to share. We shared like a tiny room.
Yeah.
And we didn't know each other and we weren't. Like, there was nothing wrong with her. We just weren't, like, we didn't click right away. So at that point, like, you're kind of screwed. I would never wish that on anyone. I think it's so unfair. Like, it's such a way to shove, it's a horrible way to shove someone into the world. Like, you just have to go room with a stranger.
Well, I think people in high school, they'd be like, this is the real world now. You're going out to college, and then you show up to college day one, you're like, ah.
The real world sucks. I mean, I feel like I knew people at the time who like roomed with their friend and I was like, they're not pushing themselves enough. Like you shouldn't just stay with your high school friend and like move with them. And then by the end of it, I was like, I wish I was living with my friend. Like this sucks.
Really? Okay. So that's how you were. You thought, oh, I need to push myself.
Yeah. I do think I just wanted to be an adult. I wanted to like be in that world, but I did not like having to just be up in somebody's grill all the time.
That's all shit.
Did you go to college?
I did 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And
then I left.
And you just got sick of it.
And then I left.
Did your parents care about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like,
for sure.
I felt like I had to, like, go to school.
See, yeah. And my dad got, I think he got a master's. No, I think. I know he got a master's from DePaul.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. My mom went to DePaul, too, so.
Yeah, my dad's like a teacher. I mean, they cared about me finishing college.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do?
Well, right.
They contested it.
Yeah.
And then they agreed because I wanted to leave.
Yeah.
I wanted to sit in the middle of the Cine Family Theater and just do this
dark.
It is dark in here.
It is. It's a movie theater. I mean.
Yeah. No, it's a movie theater. So you're in this dorm with this person. How quickly did you ever like express or articulate your frustration with the living situation?
No, I just acted like it was basically fine. I just don't think I talked that much. I think we kind of didn't talk that much. We just had very different social lives because I was still doing improv. So I basically stayed in Chicago to keep doing IO classes and everything. And so I had like a life with those friends that I had made that year, the past year. And I would go out with them all the time or go do shows or classes or whatever. And so I wasn't really on campus that much. And she had moved to Chicago from another state. And so for her, it was more like exciting to like, you know, meet other college friends and like go around Chicago. And like, I just didn't care about that, you know.
She probably wanted you. She probably wanted you to be a friend.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Do you remember her name?
Yeah, but I'm not going to say it. But I think I do think she thought I was weird. Like, I don't know that.
Well, you're for sure weird.
Right. So yeah, I don't know that I would, like, make. I don't know that she wanted to be my friend. I think she found me, like, strange. Like, she came to an improv show once, and I remember just being like, you probably just think it's the weirdest thing you've ever, like, that I'm doing this. It must just be so strange.
And she said, yeah.
I mean, I didn't ask her that. We just didn't communicate well. Like, it was like, we just didn't get past, like, the most surface level of, like, anything.
I wonder if you guys not clicking helped you get out more. Like,
probably. I was extremely busy my freshman year. I, like, did so many different shows and things where I actually got really, like, I got to a point where I was, like, sobbing about how I was so busy and, like, it was too much. And,
you
like,
were sobbing?
I remember having, like, a big breakdown because I was, like, doing, basically, like, I had, like, shows, like, 4 or 5 nights a week, and right. I was like doing another. It was just like I piled on so many things, and, like, with rehearsals for those improv teams or whatever. And
well, you're 18 here.
Yeah. I was 19. Yeah.
What does a breakdown for you look like?
It was just like I just reached a point where I was like crying a lot. I felt really depressed. I didn't want to go do any of the stuff, especially because I was doing a show at Second City at that time, like at the Skybox, which is like this kind of
I know what it is
offshoot. Yeah. And I the people I was working with were really, a lot of them were really rude to me. Like, I know them, a lot of them now, and they're nice now, but at the time, they really wrote me off as being, like, a kid, and, like, mm-hmm. they were probably, like, 25, I don't know, and I was, like, 19.
You were
and they
19.
Just, yeah, and they were just, like, some of them were outwardly rude to me, and some of them just were really dismissive, where they thought that I wasn't, like, going to be able to, like, do whatever they needed in their dumb show. Like, it was just, like, but that really drove me to, like, craziness, because...
Can we just go over that one sentence? They thought I was going to be dismissive of their dumb show.
And they thought I wouldn't be able to do what they needed in their dumb show. Okay. I was dismissive of, but at the time I was like, I was so excited to be in the show because I had never done a show there, and I was 19, and that's so cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But they really thought they were better than me, and they really treated me like that. And so it was just like, that sucked. And that's part of what led me to like freak out, because I didn't want to go there. I felt like unliked, you know, it was just bad.
Feeling unliked and going somewhere where you feel unliked is...
It's the worst.
It's the worst.
Yeah,
right?
And having
it's
to show up and like perform with these people where you feel like they don't like you, it's like, I'm not going to put myself out there. It just sucks.
Right.
So,
is like the roommate, did you not confront them?
I never did. And they were older, so I was intimidated by them. And like, they had this show, which I mean, at the time meant something to me, but it was probably like midnight on a Tuesday or something. It's like not a thing. But like, in my world, it was like so important.
Of course it
and
was.
So. But yeah, I'd love to say something to some of them now, but some of the ones that I've seen since then have been so nice, and they were never like, not all of them were rude. It was like two guys, and I just didn't, they were just shitty.
But I feel like you couldn't say anything to them now, because look how well you're doing.
Well, yeah, maybe it would just be like, I'd be an asshole, but there's a part of me that'd be like, you know, you really treated me badly. Like, I had a hard time working with you. You were really rude.
And that's, I'm impressed that at 19 and you're facing that, you seem to like, you continued onward though.
Yeah, I really was. I never really quit in term like when it came to like improv and acting stuff. I quit basically everything else I ever did in my life. But
you
like,
quit everything else. What else did you quit?
I mean, I tried everything growing up. I mean, I played clarinet for a few years. I was horrible at that. I never practiced. I was in choir. I did tap, ballet, swimming lessons. I never really learned how to swim very well. I have like a lot of like a list of things that I just like quit very quickly. But
just because
ice skating,
you didn't want to do it, or you felt-
I just feel like if I wasn't good right away, I would get really frustrated and not want to do it, and then that was it. So.
You know, that's a crazy philosophy, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wasn't good at improv right away, but I liked
you
it
stuck
enough.
With it.
Yeah.
Were you bad at 19?
No, I think I was a good improviser at 19. I think when I started my classes, I was like really nervous, and everyone was older, so I felt like just that they would be more interesting than me or something, and. I was nervous to perform with them, and I'd never done anything like that, like put myself out there and taken a class. So I was nervous, but I think I had enough like natural like talent in terms of like being funny and whatever that like it could carry me through and like make it so I wasn't the worst person in the class, and then you have enough confidence to keep going.
Yeah, natural talent's interesting.
Yeah.
Because you can't pinpoint it really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because is anyone in your family particularly funny?
My family... I would say I have a funny family. They're not like performers, but my brother's really, really funny, and my mom is very funny too. She's more like silly. My dad is funny, but I don't really want to say that because I think he'll be too excited about it. Because we usually are like, you're not funny.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by what, because you're talking about how you had a very like comfortable childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't, and you felt like you needed to challenge yourself leaving high school.
Yeah.
I feel like they would have two different responses to that. They would either have yours or just complacency.
Yeah.
And you took the much harder route.
Yeah. Which I'm thankful for. But I do kind of think that has to do with being a creative person. I think that people, when you have like a desire to make something in on some level, it's hard to stop yourself and you want to push yourself to.
Did your friends understand that? Like, did you articulate that to them? Like, you needed to work harder or you needed to challenge yourself, put yourself out there?
I think they got it. I had friends who were artistic in different ways and they were doing the same thing. Like my best friend from childhood is a painter and she was pursuing that hard. And so like they understood what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
No one was like offended by it or something.
No,
I like, felt like left out. Or
do you offend people often?
No, I just mean like I didn't like push people out of my life or anything.
No,
more,
I understand
like,
that.
Yeah.
But I just don't see also, on a side note, offending people.
Yeah, I think I could probably offend people with my comedy at times, I guess. Like at least, I mean, I have some characters that are really offensive, but I don't.
Which ones are you talking about?
I mean.
Let's go through them.
Okay, I would say Ho Ho the Naughty Elf is offensive. I just swear a lot as a lot of my characters, and Pamela from Big Bear was very offensive.
Ho Ho the Naughty Elf.
Yeah, this.
Can you do that for people who don't know what that is?
Sure. it's so funny to like just turn it on because it's like I don't typically do that, but Ho Ho, yeah, fuck yourself, suck my dick.
The thing is, I've heard it before, but I just wanted to see that. That was really for my own amusement, to be honest.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you, Lauren. It does go on and off. It seems pretty easy for you. It reminds me of, did you ever see that Actor's Studio with Kevin Spacey?
Oh, I don't know if I ever saw that.
He does a bunch of impressions.
Really?
And they're just like, oh, so you were good in this movie. By the way, can you do some impressions?
Yeah.
And he does Jack Lemmon. He does like Al Pacino. He goes through all.
Oh,
these,
wow, that's awesome!
Just on, and I feel like you do that pretty well.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. Like when someone asks you to like do a voice, like I feel like I have to like ramp up to it in my head or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can jump into it because I mean I don't know. I probably because I created all of the characters, so it's like it's just there. Yeah.
No, it's impressive.
Thank you.
But. Why would that offend people?
The positive thing is that most of the reaction is positive. I don't feel like I get a lot of people being like, that was very offensive to me. I think they know what they're signing up for when they listen to Comedy Bang Bang or whatever. Like, they're going to get, especially from me, at a certain point, you understand what you're going to get. But, like, I just imagine that people might be offended because I could say some horrible stuff.
Some people may take Christmas a little more seriously.
Yeah, they should. They really should. Should be afraid.
I'd never have been offended by that. And I wonder, are you, as like, you always hear this in comedy, that we're too easily offended now. Like we're living in this. Chris Rock has that whole spiel about, I can't do college kids anymore because they get offended by everything.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You buy that?
I think people are a lot more easily offended at this point in time. I think partly it's because everyone has the ability to like write to whoever they want online and just like say their opinion.
Right.
And so you're hearing from a lot of people you probably wouldn't hear from. And so we're getting a lot of like feedback on like, that's not appropriate.
A lot more feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sucks. Like, I think that's one of the worst parts of Twitter is that anyone can just reach out to you at any point. Like, that's also the best part because I like to get, you know, people's feedback on my show. If they're like, that was so funny. I had a
you
great
want
day.
The nice things.
Of course. But who wants mean shit? Like, I actually was watching an, episode of Chelsea Handler's talk show on Netflix, and she had Jane Lynch on. Mm-hmm. And the first thing Jane Lynch said when she came out was like, I just got a really mean comment on Twitter and I'm not gonna be able to let it go for a few days. Like, this person was like, when are they gonna stop shoving Jane Lynch down our throats? And she was like, I feel bad, like that hurts my feelings. And I liked hearing that she felt that way because I really get offended by tweets and rude comments, but I don't want to care. But it's so hard to forget when someone says something rude to you. Like, and I want, my dream would be for someone to come up to me on the street and fucking say it. The fact is, no one ever will. All these people are so hiding behind their shit. If that person met you, this is like true for like anyone insulting any celebrity. If they saw them, they would want to take a photo with them. They're not going to tell them they don't like their movie, they don't like their whatever. It's like, that's just what it is. Like, you, they're too afraid. Everyone's hiding behind their egg pictures. I hate it. It's really bad.
You good?
Yeah, I'm really sweating.
You want water?
No, I'm fine.
I like that. That was angry.
Yeah, I am. It actually really does piss me off because I think it's such a lame thing. Like, I would never write anything mean online that I couldn't back up in person. I've never written, I don't think I've ever written a mean comment online. And even like with tweeting, like I'm very careful. I'm careful not to tweet something offensive about a famous person or any person, right. But like, because it's just hurtful, because people see it. Like, it's just mean.
I also think you're in a position where that could hurt your career.
Yo, yeah. And people do now get ruined totally for tweeting something right. like
that. Well, because I still do write film reviews.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I don't like the movie. But right. I'm comfortable writing a negative film review because I'm spending hours writing it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just haphazardly throwing 140 characters
totally.
Just shitting
yeah.
on something.
Yeah.
I have my reasons for it, and it doesn't mean like I don't like them as a person.
Right, and that's fair. Like, I think that's totally a different category.
But I'm also probably too confrontational because I've had filmmakers talk to me, and I'm like, I'm down. Yeah. I'm down to talk for 2 hours because we're going to come to like an understanding with each other, and I love that.
Yeah, I think that's beneficial for them too, to be able to like go back and forth with you and get your opinion.
And they can be like, well, I thought the sentence was poorly written. I'm like, yeah, okay, you're right.
That's fair.
There should be equal give and take, I think.
Yeah.
But the Twitter stuff, I try to avoid. I don't have even 1% of the negativity people probably
sure.
throw at you because you're just, I mean, more people follow. I mean,
yeah, there's more
care.
Opportunity for people to want to say something.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, and I think there are other comedians who get a lot more negative stuff, I'm sure, than I do. But, like, all it takes is, like, one every, like, few weeks for me to feel, like, bad. Like, I will not forget. So that's horrible.
Give me something that they said.
Oh, I mean, people comment on my looks or comment on... I mean,
what do they say about your looks?
I'm not going to tell you what they say about my looks. I don't need you to think about it. But, like, people write negative stuff about people all the time online. They'll insult them. I mean, and people just, you know, write about something that I did and say they didn't like it or whatever. But, like, in a way that's not constructive. There's a huge
difference.
I
just feel like they can't say something bad about you being funny or your looks. I don't buy that.
Thank you, but that's not the case.
I know, and that's bothersome.
I know. Like, well, it's crazy because
they can say like you're tall,
right?
You're
but
tall.
I think that there are things that people will write, and I'm sure other people can relate to this. I hope that like people will insult you on something you never considered about yourself, and then you're like,
yes.
Now I have this as a thing that I should be self conscious about, which I never thought of.
That's exactly
yeah.
it. And then you do you like sit around? Because I do this, I consider it.
Yeah.
I, like, seriously.
No.
Wait, are they right?
Yeah.
Oh, am I a complete doofus? Yes, I am.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes I can definitely take it really personally and feel like, oh, yeah, I guess that I'm gross in that way or whatever thing is said about me. And then, like, then a few days later, I'm like, I don't believe that. Like, I have self-confidence. And
yeah.
so, like, it's – and I'm also okay with not being a perfect person. Like, I don't need to look – like, I don't want to get plastic surgery. I don't want to change how I look. I like that I have a unique look, but when someone catches you when you're feeling like weak, you can be like,
right.
oh, I'm gross, I'm ugly, or whatever, and feel bad. So
that wasn't really around, though, when you were...
No, I'm so thankful. Don't you think that... I mean, you're younger, so did you have Twitter in high school?
I did.
Yeah, oh, that's
crazy. But I didn't use... I use it pretty sparingly,
yeah.
and I don't put personal stuff on there.
Yeah.
Like, I think I wrote one time that I was drinking, and I was like, you know what?
Probably not.
I think I made, like, a weed reference once. And I'm happy to do that on the podcast, because I feel like I can talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I don't mind being forthright. But on Twitter, it doesn't... I don't like the snapshot.
I agree.
Like how ephemeral it is, and then how people, like, it sticks in your mind.
Yeah. I have never posted anything really about, like... drinking or smoking or anything like that, like anything that I might do in my personal life, I feel weird posting like even just like a Snapchat of like smoking weed or something. Mm-hmm. It's like I don't want to give the impression. Also because there are a lot of people that are younger following and like it's kind of a weird world where like I feel a little bit responsible on some level, even though like I usually don't swear on my Twitter. But then there's a part of me that's like, why? Like sometimes it's funnier to say fuck
it's,
and a joke and like, but I'm like not doing it.
Okay, I found one. This says you were born in an actual dumpster.
That is not true. It was an aluminum garbage can.
Oh, it says your first album went platinum, but that's not true.
You're right. Leave it.
Well, this one says you made a sex tape with Count Chocula.
That is false. It was the Hamburglar. Yeah.
Oh, wait, this can't be right. It says you're falling for me.
Oh, my God.
Wait, over here says your real name is Barnabas McCart.
Where do these characters come from? And I don't mean that in like, what inspired you to do... No, I don't care about that. Like,
yeah. Just,
let's go specifically with... do you watch The Bachelorette?
Yeah. Yeah.
I figured that.
Yeah, I love reality shows.
All right, walk me through The Bachelorette because I've watched it pretty infrequently.
And, I mean, good for you.
It's incredible. Well, so here's a weird thing. I've never said this to like anyone, mm-hmm. but I'll just tell you this. My mom and I, at like age 8 or 9, I remember like Monday nights we'd watch The Bachelor.
Oh, nice.
And I just remember all the roses. And
yeah.
Then I don't know if there was The Bachelorette back
there
then.
There was.
Was
it's been
it?
On for a while.
Okay.
Because I watched it, I think, in high school.
Okay.
So, yeah, for sure.
That makes sense.
But, yeah, that makes perfect sense. It's the best. It's like, I love it. It's the worst, best thing ever. Mm-hmm. And like, I got to go on this talk show after The Bachelor. They had like this short lived, like 4-episode thing last season where they'd have like funny people come on and like talk about the show. And then like people from the show would come on, which was like a dream come true. 'Cause it was hilarious to be a part of The Bachelor universe. But, it's like the worst show ever. I can't stop watching it.
It's the worst, but I can't stop.
I feel like they know that. Like, I think everyone, I mean, like the people involved, I think for the most part, they earnestly want love. But my big problem with it is that I want there to be a bachelor or bachelorette that's completely unknown. So that the people are coming in, getting to know them, not like having seen them on the previous season and coming in with their
Oh, they reuse people now?
Yeah. So it's every season is someone who basically got very close to winning on the last season but didn't.
How are they going to be back on there?
But that's the thing is that like people, it keeps the fans and like I get why they do it, but like, because people are like familiar with them and then the people who want to date them like feel like they know them a little bit. But it seems like you'd find a more like the relationships that started in the earlier seasons before they were doing that lasted longer. Like some people are still married.
Did you ever watch Flavor Flav?
I did, yeah.
I watched that.
Flavor of Love.
You know, this is embarrassing, but I was Flavor Flav for Halloween.
Wow, that is embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think.
I had the clock around my...
That's
yeah, I for sure shouldn't.
It's probably not a good. Just like don't have any pictures of it.
We definitely have photos. I wonder about our interest in that show.
Yeah, I mean, I think with reality TV, I love so much. I love Real Housewives and all those shows, and I watch them, I think, a lot because it requires very little thought. I can really zone out. I think when I watch like comedies now or like other things that. With like acting, I mean, I think they're acting on those shows too. But like,
oh, they're for
with
sure
scripts,
acting.
And you know, I feel like I'm kind of thinking about acting and thinking about like the way it was shot and things that like I wish I could turn off, but I feel like are just kind of there once you start doing stuff.
Is there also part of you in watching that and thinking, oh, I could be in that?
Oh, you like in like TV shows?
Yeah,
like you'll kind of be like, oh, that's a great role, or like things like that, or like, oh, I wish I, or like roles that I did audition for, you'll see on the show, and then that's, you can't really suspend the disbelief at all because you like were there.
Do you think we like The Bachelor because, or The Bachelorette, because we like people, we like watching people fail?
I think a lot of it is that. Like, those are the best moments of the show. I mean, when you see someone.
Oh.
Well, because that's the only time where you see them feeling genuine feelings, or you can be sure that they're genuine more than other times. When someone says they're like they're falling for someone, you can be like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that he really thinks that about her." Then you see them crying because like she rejected them, and you're like, "Oh, I think he might actually have really cared about her." And
I love
like,
the fact that you've worked out the emotional weight. of these characters, like these people that you're seeing on screen, like, you know, I don't know if they're really into that each other.
Oh, that's all it is like judging whether or not they're really in love with each other.
Who are you rooting for? I don't know. Does that mean
well,
something?
It was JoJo this past season. I was not rooting for anyone because I couldn't tell the guys apart. There were like three guys at the end, and every time they came on screen, I named the wrong person. I was like, oh, there's Jordan, and it was Chase, or like whatever. It was just like, I could not keep track of them.
Do you watch The Bachelorette?
Yeah.
Because when I watch that, I find that a lot of the women look alike.
And they
act similarly. And that's bothersome.
And that's just true for the men and women, depending on whose season it is. But like they kind of pull from this very specific type of person. And that's a part that fucks me up too, because I'm like, if it was Like, if I were on The Bachelorette, I would not be attracted to any of the men that they have in their general pool. I'm like, these are all disgusting people.
Are they all, like...
Well, they're all just, like, they work out constantly. They're, like, they go get self-tanner. They, like, they're... It's just not the type of person I think is attractive.
I thought people stopped doing the self-tanner thing.
It doesn't look like they stopped. I mean, like, or they're laying in the sun, which I also think is gross. Like, you're stupid. So, I do have a problem with that. I feel like if... And everyone has to have a six-pack. Literally, they all have a six-pack. So, I'm like... What if she fell in love with someone who doesn't have a six-pack?
Oh,
but
no.
She, this is impossible in this world. In this world, she has to fall in love with someone with a six-pack. But I think that's so unrealistic. That's like, don't you want to have a variety of people with different body types, different, like, maybe she's attracted to a certain kind of guy, but, like, do they have to be perfectly fit, everything about them, like, well-manicured? Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
Every woman who's on the show is attracted to that kind of guy? I don't believe that.
No, but... That's what people believe is attractive.
Right.
Like it seems to be the universal acceptance of...
But it's so lame because it's like, then why do you think none of those relationships work out? Because they're all based on superficial shit.
But Lauren, it's on TV. They're making money off doing this show.
I mean, I know.
Can you... It's not like... You can be on that show. Well, if were on that show... I would watch it.
Right. Well, that would be actually interesting because I'd have real conversations, try to learn about the person.
No.
They don't learn anything
no
about the...
No way you would have real conversations.
Really?
Yeah. You know what you would do? Characters.
You would do
bits on top of bits on top of
that
bits.
Well, maybe some bits. I feel like I was going to say I would not do characters, but I hopefully would be on with some funny people where you want to do bits with them.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think you're going to find like good rapport with...
There's not like, with those guys.
Yeah.
If you had people that
so
I would
you
actually,
get to
right, because they'd be picking people for me.
Yeah, but even the drafting pool that you can pick from, like the producers are still picking them.
The producers are picking them, and it's also people who want to be on the show, which automatically makes them undateable.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
So yeah, basically,
if you
I
also
can't
do if you're on that show, it's not like you would. You think you would find love?
No, I think I would be really sad that I was kissing people and my parents were watching it at home. Like that would just be so gross. So weird.
Is that the biggest fear? Your parents watching you kiss someone?
I just think that's like so disgusting. Like when I watch, it's whatever in real life, but like when I see it on the show, I'm like, they're saying like sexual stuff to these people. They're like flirting with them really overtly. Then they start like making out. Then they have like the fantasy suite near the end where you know they have sex. Like everyone, all your family is watching the show where you're like, they just had sex.
What is that called?
The fantasy suite. Which, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it would just be so gross.
Are they all having sex on that show?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems like an okay time.
I mean, yeah. They can't have sex until they reach the final point and they pick three people that they can have sex with, basically.
Oh, really? Like, oh, but that's bullshit. You know that there's some...
They might hook up, but it's really insane. Every time the cameras basically catch someone like seeing the Bachelor, Bachelorette like out of turn, it's like a huge deal. So
oh,
like,
is
I
it?
Don't think that they really are hooking up
really?
Off camera. It's very rare. One season, there was a guy who came into the girls' room and they had sex, and it was like the cameras figured it out.
Oh, they
yeah.
caught him mid?
They didn't caught him having sex, but they the next day, basically, they knew that he came to the room. Then they left the room. They didn't know what – they couldn't stay in there,
oh.
but they knew that he was breaking the law, like the rule of the show.
The law.
I know. It's not a law. And then –
They broke the law of the Bachelor.
Yeah, so it's just really huge. And she didn't pick him in the end because she already had him. I have a lot of theories about the show.
I love all the theories.
Yeah.
You find comfort in like these characters.
Yeah.
And I heard, I was listening to Marin today.
Yeah.
And something I thought was interesting that you guys didn't connect. And this is, again, I could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But you're talking about how you watch sitcoms a lot.
Yeah.
I do too. Like I've been rewatching Parks and Rec. Lately, like it's something I fall asleep to.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
No, I don't fall asleep to TV.
Do you turn it off?
Yeah. I don't have a TV in my room, which I feel like is.
Oh.
Yeah. Or do you watch the computer? Regardless, I don't do that. I turn it off before
That's
I go to
good.
Sleep.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I do it sometimes. I'm trying to like read before I go to bed now.
Me too. It's much better for
it's
your brain.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Because then you get naturally tired because like
yeah.
reading takes.
And it's not like a screen. And
it's not a screen. No,
yeah.
Yeah. I read something at the. Who cares?
I just read this too. There was like 30 minutes of like no screen
before
time.
Before you go into bed.
It makes a difference actually. The first night I did it, I felt like very different from it.
Really? Because mm-hmm. you know how I felt? I did it the night before. I was up last night watching your video. So I blame you for like my
Sorry
mediocre sleep. I had bad sleep that first night.
Yeah.
I woke up in the middle of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
could
keep trying, I guess.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be good.
It's supposed to be good. But I watch these sitcoms because I find them extremely comforting, and I like the routine and familiarity of it.
Yeah.
And it seemed like you like doing that too.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you were talking about how in grade school, like, all you would eat was peanut butter sandwiches or something.
Yeah.
I think the two are connected.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you, there's something about, it's a weird, it's contradictory because your characters are not comfortable at all.
Yeah.
Like, they go to places that I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Lawrence, like, this is nuts. Like, she's crazy. This is amazing. And really, especially the stuff, I don't want to get on tangent, but the stuff with, on Comedy Bang Bang, where you're the detective.
Oh, yeah, Kid Detectives with Thomas Middleditch.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it's really disturbing.
It's so disturbing. It's the best. But it's a weird parallel because those are out in left field, and yet it seems these other things in your life, you didn't like being adventurous in food.
Yeah.
You watch these shows that are like, create a comfortable environment.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I think that I do tend to like certain comforts in my life and like some predictability. But one of the things that I love about improvising and especially doing characters where you can do them like on Comedy Bang Bang for like a long period of time and kind of get involved with the characters in a more like on a deeper level. I love it because I'm able to tap into like a part of my brain that like you're not really allowed to use every day. Like you're not allowed to like say anything you want to anyone all the time. So, and I don't. I definitely am like a polite person, or like I'll get into like little confrontations, which is like a relatively new thing. But I'm really happy about that. I like being able to like say what I want to somebody, or like say that someone's rude, or like talk back. But I don't do it that much. But
you've done it on this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not to me. Like, you got mad about the Twitter thing.
Oh, yeah.
You've given me back. It's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Okay,
and
cool.
And also, it seemed your brain, like, there was a light bulb when you did the elf.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
You like, got everything really, out that you wanted to.
Yeah, it's really fun. And, like, I will sometimes, like, you know, especially going on tour, will be on stage in front of these crowds. And, like, part of doing it with the crowd is that you get the response you typically don't get doing a podcast. And it's really fun. But I'll leave and be like, I don't know what I just said for the past hour. It's almost like being in another, like in a hypnotic state or something, which is, I just think is so great. It feels like a very therapeutic thing.
Did you see Don't Think Twice?
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, there's a good line that I think Kate Micucci's character says, like, the beauty of improv is that it's like a moment. And the moment's gone almost before it even like begins.
Yeah.
I think I may have butchered it. But I was thinking, yeah, you say a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you probably don't think about what that... Like, do you think about, like, what you said?
No, I can't remember most of what I said. And also, like, I'll realize in the moment that I'll say something that is funnier than I even intended. Like, it's, like, some back part of the brain that, like, is able to connect things better than I think I can. Where, like, I'll make some sort of joke and then realize, like, oh, that's actually a triple-level joke, but I didn't really think that or whatever. So it's kind of fun to just let it go. I think if you think too hard, anytime that I'm, like, in my head...
Right.
During a show, like, it's horrible, so you really can't.
So it needs to be purely instinctual.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, like, after you learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you find it's, like, the most pure form of who you are?
Probably. I think that when I know someone and, like, if I meet someone and they don't know that side of me, like, basically, like, I'm talking about, like, through work, like, through acting or something. If they don't know that part of me, they really don't get me at all, I think, because I can be friends with someone, but if I know that they'll never hear or understand that, I feel like they really don't. They're missing out on a huge portion of my personality because I'm not really like that in conversation. Like, I'm not going to be that insane or, like, go off and, like, do some, like, goofy character, like, that much in conversation, especially with someone who's not a comedian. Like, it's just not going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I have these friendships that I do feel like are a little more superficial because they just don't know. Like, I'm like, that's my brain is so much weirder than you are probably giving me credit for, and maybe you don't want to know that. So it's
that's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about having those superficial relationships?
I don't love that. I mean, I think that, like, there's something nice about it. Like, I have met so many wonderful people, and that's cool, but the people I really want to hang out with are the people that know me more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or even like, or just even comedians. Like, I think even if they don't necessarily know what I do, it's easier to be loose and be yourself in conversation with someone who also does it.
Are you a sociable person?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I love to be home. I love to, like, do nothing. That's, like, my dream is when someone's like, let's not hang out after all. I'm like, great. So
when plans are canceled,
I love
that's
when
your
things
dream.
Are canceled, but I, not with, like, my my very close friends. But, like, you know, if I'm having a lunch with, like, someone I, like, know, but, like, we don't hang out that much, mm-hmm. if they're like, can we reschedule, I'm usually, like, great. Like, yeah. it's not, like, I'm not, like, I don't want to see you, but, like, I love the idea of, like, getting to have more free time by myself.
Right. And also, it's the thing where you're not canceling.
Right, so you get, like, an extra bonus point.
So it's, like, you're not in the wrong here. Yeah, I know that.
You really can just, like, relax into it and not feel bad. Yeah, it's the best. I love being at home. But, yeah.
So that is that LA in a nutshell for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think people cancel plans all the time. So if you're trying to be social here, it can be hard because people flake all the time. And it is more like that here than maybe anywhere else that I've lived.
Do you think because people are more flaky here?
I think people maybe I don't know if I would say across the board people are more flaky, but I think that like there's kind of a culture of like make plans and cancel them like all the time. Like I don't know, it just feels like what it is.
It's not like that in Chicago.
No, it's not. And like that's I lived in New York for a bit, and I didn't experience that there either.
Maybe a Midwestern.
Yeah, like the kind of feeling of like we made the plan, let's do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because people care less about people here?
Maybe. I mean, there's probably something to be said about people being more self-involved and, like, focused on their whatever plan they have. But, I don't know, did you move here with anyone or did you move here alone?
I moved here alone.
Yeah, that's hard. Because, yeah. I mean, you have to kind of force yourself to go out and do things. And,
yeah.
And, like, I kind of mentioned that you were coming from San Francisco, that, like, that's a bustling city and you take public transportation or right. whatever. And, like, you're automatically around people even if you're not interacting directly with people. So... that is weird here. Like, anytime I go for a walk, I feel very, like, weird. Like, why am I on the street? Like,
why am I walking?
Like, no one's around. It yeah. does feel strange.
It is strange.
Yeah.
Do you feel, you're talking about self-involvement. Do you think you're more self-involved since moving here?
I don't know. I'd like to think I'm not. But I think that, like, this career involves a certain, like, expects a certain level mm-hmm. of self-involvement because you have to, like, creating your own opportunities. So.
And putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And then very nature of putting yourself out there is like, hey.
I'm worth listening to.
I'm worth, especially the amount of like stuff you're putting out.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that you're confident enough or happy enough with what you're putting out that you want to continue doing it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And like with doing podcasts and stuff, I do feel like... you know, so much of why I think my podcast is funny is because of the people that I have on. So I'm like very thankful that I have a lot of funny friends in my life and like people from the community who are great. So I will often be excited about an episode just based on what they did. So it is easier to feel like it's not just like my own thing that I'm putting out. Like I'm, you know, you get to kind of like showcase someone else and get, especially like avid podcast listeners get to learn about new improvisers that they might not have heard on a podcast yet. So that's really fun for me. But yeah, I think I would like to say I make an effort to not be self-involved. I have close friendships where we talk about each other and we're not, you know, it's not all just like my shit, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I don't know.
Do you have a lot of shit?
No. I mean, like, you know, I think everyone has their day to day. I wouldn't say I have like a exorbitant amount of shit, but I think I have like my own, you know, worries and problems that I'm dealing with every day, just like anyone else, where like you want to vent to someone, but you don't want to like only vent and never get back from the person.
Yeah. I ask that because when I talk to comedians often, and I have a lot of comedian friends,
mm-hmm.
I think you even mentioned this on Marin, there seems to be that recurring narrative that they fall into of like, I started because I was like angry and depressed or like I have all this stuff. And there does seem to be, like it goes hand in hand, comedy and depression.
Yeah.
Although they're like antithetical feelings.
Right.
They go hand in hand often.
It's very true. I think I'm thankful that that's not something that I suffer from, at least not on like a real clinical level.
You don't suffer from depression?
No. But I didn't have like a rough childhood. I think that was something that Mark was disappointed by. But
he did seem agitated.
He likes it if you have a bad childhood or something to dig into. I unfortunately don't. But I'm glad.
He said that to you?
No. That's what I've inferred from listening to his show a ton. Yeah. And I was kind of expecting him to be bored by the fact that I don't have anything insane for my childhood.
You wanted to do SNL.
Yeah.
And you tried out for it.
Yeah.
And you also asked me, did I move here with anyone? And I think you asked it because you moved here with your ex-husband, right?
Yeah. He was my boyfriend. Yeah. We were like long distance.
So I was thinking on the ride over, like SNL, well, first, before I get there, why don't you talk about like just for people who didn't listen to the Marin episode, how that panned, like what you did, how that panned out, how it even happened.
I always wanted that growing up. It was kind of like the one thing that I could look to as like what I could do. It took me until I was like an adult to really understand that like being a comedic actor, you can do so many different types of things. It's not just that. But of course, that was always a dream. And I think anyone who does improv or sketch, like that would be an amazing goal.
Was there someone in an older cast that like you, oh man, I like her. Like, I got to do that.
Oh yeah. I was obsessed with Chris Farley and Adam Sandler. And like, that was like,
also, why did I say her immediately?
Well, yeah, it wasn't a woman actually. I don't think women are funny.
No, that's, not, that's completely, I think that's like subtle sexism on my part.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Thank you, Lauren.
But
see, I told you, you're being more confrontational. I love it. It's great.
I really
you're
mean
breaking
it
out of your shell.
But yeah, I was in like, you know, fourth grade, I think, around the time when like Chris Farley and Adam Sandler and David Spade were all on the show, and they were like my favorite people. So I definitely, and I mean, I watched my whole life after, so there were tons of people that I admired on the show. But yeah, I eventually had an opportunity. It was, I did a showcase at UCB. They basically will I don't know if it's every year, but whenever SNL is looking to hire, they'll do a showcase where they show a handful of comedians to some people who come and watch and from SNL, and like you get 5 minutes to do characters, or 3 to 5 minutes, and or like bits or whatever you're going to do. And so I got that opportunity, and I did that showcase at UCB, and then SNL flew me to New York to perform the same material at the Pitt Theater, and Lauren was there.
Can you tell me about the plane ride?
Like, how nervous was I? Yeah. I was so nervous.
Did you have a window seat? Do you remember this at all?
I don't remember where I sat, but I remember being extremely nervous. And I had all my idiot props, my bag and stuff. And I just like, I felt very, every moment in my hotel that I was like, was downtime, I was working on it over and over again, because you don't want to be like chilling and then you mess it up because you didn't practice. I think also practicing too much can be bad. So I don't know if I did it too much or I didn't.
I love the idea of you pacing around in your hotel room. Someone's like, we got to do cleaning. We got to clean. And you're like, no, I'm in the middle of a character.
Wearing like a fucking witch hat. But yeah, I think that like it's interesting to look back on. Well, and then so I did that showcase and Lauren was there. And then they flew me out again to test on on stage at 30 Rock. And that's the one I was really nervous for. The first one, I wasn't freaking out as much.
You did really well with the live audience, right?
Yeah, and that for me that's always easier for me, I think.
It's instant validation.
Yeah, and it makes you calmer. Like, it's just like hearing laughs, I can like ease into something. Yeah. And yeah.
I remember I recently stopped doing this job where I was like programming a theater in San Francisco, and I was forced to do intros all the time. Not forced. I like doing it.
Yeah.
But I remember I'd always, like, within the first 15 seconds, I had to put a joke because I felt like I couldn't. My job was to, like, the Roxy Theater is a nonprofit based in San Francisco.
Sure, you have to do this kind of like,
you know, if you can donate, it can help us continue onward, blah, 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 blah. Twitter's terrible. And, like, I would try to put a joke in there. It was usually better than that.
Yeah.
And the moment you got a laugh, or I got a laugh, I was like, oh, thank God.
Right,
they don't think I'm wasting their time. Like, they don't think I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah,
or they may, but like, at they least don't
just
think
write
I'm a
you off completely. Yeah.
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 So you did well. Like, people laughed at.
Yeah, that went well, and I got the audition to go back again, and like that was great. I had to do some different. They wanted me to like do some different stuff than what they'd seen.
It was impressions, right?
Some impressions, yeah. And I don't usually do impressions, so that was not as fun for me. And then also, like, I look back on it as. It's such an interesting time to me because I achieved my dream of getting to audition and be on stage. And like, that was so amazing. It was actually very validating to just be there.
To even be in the conversation.
Yeah.
This was what, 2012?
This was, I want to say 2012.
Okay.
And like January, it was very early in the year. And I like, had just been on a sitcom on NBC at the time that was like, we were kind of on hold waiting to see if we'd get a second season.
This is the Chelsea Handler thing?
Yeah. Are you there, Chelsea? And so,
Was that a good show, by the way? I never watched that.
People would probably say no. It got 12 episodes. I mean, like, I loved doing it. It was so great.
But you never watched it.
I watched it. Yeah.
Oh, you watched it?
I mean, of course. I watch everything I do, though.
Oh.
But, yeah.
You're the opposite of most people.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I learn a lot when I see myself.
That's good.
But, like, I loved doing that because it was my first big job. I mean, I got on a sitcom, like, pretty early into being in LA, and so that was huge for me. But I think what was weird was that I was getting this SNL opportunity kind of like after I felt like, oh, I'm already on a path to like getting more TV work. I don't know if I want to move to New York and like, you know, do this job that I know is also like one of the most painful, hard jobs in the world. Like, right. I don't know.
And it doesn't pay as well as that other job.
Yeah, definitely not. So ultimately, I mean, that wasn't even an option for me to turn down. I didn't get it. But I look back at it and it's so interesting because I also like, I didn't have established characters at that time. I really had, I was just doing like bits and like kind of just making up characters for the audition. I didn't have like this well of characters that I have now. It would be entirely different for me to audition now. Like I actually have distinct characters that have games to them. Like it would, I don't think my audition was like killer. Like I would never want to watch it. So it's, that's what's kind of like funny about it to me now is I'm like, oh yeah, like in a sense I thought that I was like past it in some, on some level, and then I look back and I'm like, but I also like wasn't ready for it. So it's a really specific weird place to be in.
Do you want
to
try out now?
No, I don't want to do it now. I
because they like didn't Taron Killam and Jay Farrell, they're not doing it now.
They're leaving now after 6 years, I read online. But like
I'll tell you, one of the first things I thought was like, oh, Lauren could do this.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I don't know. I think that I mean, like, there's a part of me that would, like, still think that was really cool. And, like, it's awesome to get to be on that show. Like, I look at any of my friends who've ever gotten it, and I'm like, that's amazing. Like, to say you were on it is so fucking cool.
But you feel like you're past it.
I don't know that I think, personally, I don't think I'm, like, above it as, like, a person or
right,
performer.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I just feel like, oh, I like my life how it is. And, like, I like working on shows and stuff. And, like, I'd like to do my own thing. So it's that's all. It seems I'd love to like host it. That's my actual dream now, is to host it.
Yeah.
Like, that would just be amazing.
You were talking about how the things you wanted, they're kind of temporary.
Yeah.
They're not forever. And you moved here and like you moved here with your husband and like your boyfriend, soon to be husband.
Yeah.
And like that probably helped moving, right? Like that you had.
Yeah. There's like a stable kind of home base.
You had that home base and then the end goal was like, I want to be on SNL. I want to do this. And now...
Well, it's really like, I want to be on TV. By the time I moved, I was more... That was more the idea was like, I just want to be an actor and comedian. And SNL, when I first moved, it was probably still like a thing that I was really interested in. But by the time I was like, even just doing commercials and TV, any TV work, it kind of fills that need. So you learn.
Sure.
Yeah.
But all those original, like, it's all different now.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I think that's something that I could have benefited from someone kind of explaining to me at an earlier age, that like it's okay for your dreams to change. I think I felt a lot of personal guilt about SNL when I was auditioning, and because I was torn. I was like, do I really want it? Because I want to like do this other stuff, and I already have been doing this other stuff. But then there's like the ego part of you that's like, I want to get it because I always said I wanted this.
Right.
And that's so not the point, you know. Like I think that like you have to allow yourself to change and allow yourself to let your goals move, and like, you know, as you do more things, you learn what you care about and you learn what's important to you and what you like doing and what makes you happy. And I don't know that would be what makes me happy. I think I probably would have broken under the pressure there on some level. Like it would have made me feel insane.
You think so?
Like, I don't know, staying up until 4 a.m and writing, sleeping at an office and writing a sketch and like all that stuff. It's like, that's, I like to go to bed and I like to like have my alone time. I like to not be like running myself ragged. Right. I don't like to feel like I'm constantly being judged by my peers, or like that they don't think I'm good enough, or I'm not in with the cool writer and so I don't have the right hookup and I'm not going to be able to do it. You know, like I won't get on this episode.
Right.
So it's like that stuff would mess with me. And I know that it messes with so many people who are on the show. I'm not saying present people. I'm saying like in the history of it. So like, I don't know if that's right for my personality. And I didn't know any of that when I was in fourth grade and thought I want to be on SNL.
Right.
I didn't know what it would take or what kind of lifestyle it requires or anything like that. So it's okay to change it.
But it takes an emotional toll on you when the things you thought you wanted, you not only do you not get them, you don't even want them anymore.
Right.
And then
I cried about it for sure. Like it was like, but it's such a confusing cry because it's like, I didn't get it, but I don't want to get it, but I want them to tell me I'm good enough. I said I always wanted this, and like everyone in my life basically sees that as the one success story. You know what I mean? Like, I think people who don't know anything about improv and sketch think that like, oh, you're not on SNL, so like you didn't do it. Like, Or, you know what I mean? And right. It's like, that's okay. There's a million ways to be able to do this and to feel successful and validated by it.
See, and that's precisely what I was thinking. Like, what is now the thing for you?
Yeah, I think for me...
Because the SNL is the clear pinnacle. For anyone, you know, like, for my parents, if I work at the New York Times or the New Yorker, and they're like, ah, yeah.
Right, you did it.
You did it.
Yeah. But you can still be doing all these other amazing things that people are excited about, and they're like, we don't get what that is, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. And I have to explain. But again, they're not like, you know, they're not from the dark ages.
No,
like,
they're not dismissive of that.
They're not dismissive, yeah. And they're wildly supportive.
Yeah, no, that's great. But it is still like, I think, and my family too, I think they understand why I would or wouldn't want to get it. Mm-hmm. But it also involves a lot of explanation. Like, I think I had to walk them through like all of that,
right.
All of the emotions related to it. I think for me now, I would love to be like the star of a sitcom or to have my own show. So those are the things that like are my big goals.
Your goals.
Yeah.
Do you think that'll make you happy?
I don't know. I don't want to rely too much on outward things to feel that way, because I've definitely been burned that way before. I think like, you know, getting too attached to the idea of money or like whatever, like that would mean then I'd have like this house or I'd have this thing or whatever, like... Anytime I've let myself do that, I feel
it's always disappointing.
Really disappointed.
It's
so,
always
yeah.
profoundly disappointing.
Definitely. So it's kind of better to just be like, you know what? I feel better when I read before bed and I go on walks or I do this or that. Like whatever, like in your life that you can control,
right.
to make you happy on the inside is so much. I mean, that sounds like a little cheesy, but it's just so true. Like I think I've had to learn that over and over again, and I'm still learning that. I don't think I'm totally done with that.
I don't think you ever stop learning about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
This is fun. This
yeah.
is good.
Thank you.
Well, there it is. A special thanks to the Cine family in Los Angeles for letting us record this episode of the show in their theater. Do be sure to check out the Cine family, which is arguably the most fascinating art house in Los Angeles or otherwise, at www.cinefamily.org. I'd also like to thank Brooke Popjoy for helping arrange this special interview. You can stream Lauren's episode on the characters, which you absolutely should, on Netflix now. Her podcast with special guest Lauren Lapkus releases a new episode pretty much every week on Earwolf. It's a must listen. And if you're in LA, do be sure to swing by the UCB Theater, where you can see her perform with a few different groups. Lastly, a big thanks to Lauren for coming on to talk. People. If you've enjoyed this or any episode of the podcast, it would mean a lot if you could give us a review on iTunes. I know it's not the world's most exciting activity, but it does truly help us reach new listeners. And new listeners help us continue creating this show. So, you can subscribe to Talk Easy on iTunes, SoundCloud, or your favorite podcasting app. If you want to drop us a line about anything, feel free to email the show at talkeasypod@gmail.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TalkEasyPod. As always, our theme music is provided by Vanilla. Our executive producer is David Chen. Graphics by Ian Jones. Illustrations by Krishna. Social media by Maria Mayella. The show is produced and edited by Corey Atad. I'm your host, Sam Fragoso. Thank you for listening to Talk Easy. I'll see you next week.
Looking for a fabulous fashion brand that celebrates you? Then look no further than Boston Proper, where styles are designed with you in mind, so you can look and feel amazing, no matter the day, season, or occasion. At bostonproper.com, you'll find fashion that knows you best. For over 30 years, Boston Proper has been the fashion destination for confident women who want to elevate their look with unique, sophisticated clothing at affordable prices. Visit bostonproper.com today. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.